Okay, we're beginning now on tape two, and I want to ask you what you feel most satisfied that you've done in your long life. What is it that brings you the greatest satisfaction?
My satisfaction. Of course, it's due to its development in America. To be able to clothe my impulses in form and color that soothes me aesthetically, I've accomplished something. I'm very happy. Every time Michael shows me those things, I said, did I do it? Have I done it? Something like this, of course. I feel that I have gone through those vital moments in my life demanding its fulfillment, its externalization, to externalize it. And I had to find the form that pleased me. It's just like a woman walking into a shop and she can only put a garment on when it pleases her. It's the same feeling. I wanted to find a form for my impulse. Well, it doesn't come, you can't buy it anywhere, and it doesn't come overnight. It's a matter of experimentation. And not all things that I did are worthy of my praise. I kicked my foot through many pieces of paper because they were no good, which is true with every artist, whether it's Rembrandt or Picasso. They had their moments of exaltation, complete satisfaction, and moments where they kicked their feet through the things they did. Because a human being is that sort of an animal. The chemistry in his body does not always mutate in the same way. By virtue of things on the outside of the animal, the environment. Every time you turn, there's something that moves you the way you do. And as you move, you try to externalize that feeling on something that you can look at and almost feel, you see. Well, that's creating. And I'm very proud of being an artist. I'm established. I'm known almost throughout the world in some fashion. I'm sorry that my mama and papa are not alive. I should like to show them, and they would know that her opposition was wrong. That my consistent denial of her advice was the right thing to do.
Do you think the fact that you came here as a young man to this country and were an immigrant for a period of time, do you think that influenced you as a personality?
There's no question about it. There's no question about it. After all, I'm a student. Having exposed my mind to Thomas Jefferson and Lincoln and men of that caliber and Franklin Roosevelt, I would have to be a piece of stone and not to respond to the greatness of those people. I fashion my ideal, my idealism, and the influences that I've received reading those people. To me, Jefferson was the father of democracy, or the greatness of my life, I'd say, despite its deviations today. But he was a great man. I couldn't get it in Russia. And there was a czar over there who squeezed my throat. Over here, I was free. It fashioned me as a human being, understanding the human nature, and being very, very happy and proud of being alive in America.
Do you feel you have some side of you that is a Russian part of you?
No.
No.
Not a thing. I have consciously eliminated anything that would make someone doubt my Americanism. Mm-hmm. Primarily, of course, is my accent. I've eliminated that completely, see, and my mastery of its language. Mm-hmm. English to me is a beautiful language, and I've mastered it. Mm-hmm. My vocabulary is very large.
Mm-hmm. Well, at 101 years of age,
yeah.
What do you attribute such a ripe old age to?
A sanity of mind and a sanity of a stomach. Two things. Those are two principles. If two work in sympathy, if two work in concert, there's no reason why one can't stretch out to be 100 years. I'm an example.
It seems that visual artists often live to a ripe old age, visual artists who are still actively...
In a sense, you're right. See, visual artists don't abuse themselves in many ways. And one thing that drives them is to do a good painting. And they fashion their impulses to help them accomplish it. But it doesn't deviate them into different ways. I don't eat hot dogs. And I don't wash it down with a Coca-Cola.
Okay. Is there anything else that you can think of relevant to your coming here to this country as a young man, you're making the kind of life for yourself that you wish to lead?
Well, my first job here in New York was with a button factory. In my days, women used to wear coats with buttons made of cloth and metal rings around them, mm-hmm. if you know this bit. Mm-hmm. The metal rings had to be painted. I got a job. I'm an artist. So I'm not a student. And I was painting for $6 a week. Sit at the table, painting the little rims on the button to put on the coats that the women used to wear.
Were you in a factory, or you were doing this as homework at home?
In a factory. Uh-huh. In a factory. People who had a big Columbia Button Works. And I was a good one because I knew how to handle color, what do you say? And they wanted me there. They were happy to have me. Painting rings and buttons. And that was my first job. And then after getting some education in high school and all that, I got a job in Dun's and Bradstreet's, filing papers and things of that sort. And then I got $50 a month I've advanced, I say. I was a good runner. The opportunity was visible and palpable, touchable. In the United States, it wasn't where I come from, which was a great thing to me. Me, a poor little boy, coming into a nation where I could put on decent suit of clothes, see, and go to theater occasionally, and go on Broadway, see, so I could never do before. I was in a different world. It opened my mind, but I wanted to know why and how. You had to be an American. You had to know its origin. You had to know something about the Constitution and the Bill of Rights.
Do you remember when you became a citizen?
Yeah. I became a citizen when I entered when I joined the Navy. There was no questions asked. Nothing. Push you right in. You joined the Navy and you became a citizen.
What motivated you to join the Navy? Why did you join the Navy?
I joined the Navy because I had two brothers. One of them had a job who could contribute something to the family. As an artist, as a student, an artist, I couldn't give Mama anything. So I went to the Navy officers, the Board of something, I forget the name. And I told them, if you tell me that you will not draft my boy, my friend, my brother, into the Army, I'll join the Navy. See? Because I told them that my brother supports the family. I don't, I'll join, and they've agreed. So I've joined the Navy, and they let my brother go. And I was just a book private, doing like everything, all the chores of a book private, and I was perfectly happy. I had no desire to climb to become an officer. That wasn't interesting me at all, see, because I don't particularly support Navy or the Army. To me, they're institutions of killing, see. So it wasn't interesting. But I had to do what I did, my stint for the country, and the ability to help Mama to let my brother go free. All of that made me an American. Simply. I know my country, and I've traveled from coast to coast. I've been to most states in the United States. With my wife, camped in every state. And we took 3 months' time to get to Los Angeles and 3 months' time to come back.
Why did you camp? Why did you camp?
Why did I camp?
Yeah.
I had no money to pay for camping, you understand? And we had the provisions to make dinner. I catch fish in a lake, and knowing the country. Mm-hmm. I know my United States now. I swim in the Atlantic and I swim in the Pacific. See, I wanted to know. I wanted to touch everything, to feel everything. A very curious individual. I wanted to know why things are as they are. Not just to overlook them, I want to examine them and respond. I'm very happy. I'm extremely a happy man. At 101, I'm still romantic. I mean, in the sense, I'm a human being. I love life. I love very much. And I have the means to live. I paint, I lecture, I have exhibits, There's nothing finer in life. Nothing finer.
I think that might be the perfect place to end.
Ma'am?
I think that might be the perfect place to end our interview. It's a beautiful statement. I want to thank you so much for a most interesting interview.
I hope I didn't say anything wrong.
You didn't, I assure you. I've been speaking with Alfred Levitt, and this is September 8th, 1995.
Yeah.
We're here in the Ellis Island Oral History Studio, and this is Janet Levine for the National Park Service, and I'm signing off. Thank you.